I'm Alan Walker. This is the Chat Talent People podcast, and you're about to listen to my co-host Jeremy Russon chatting with occupational and organisational psychologist Sarah Duggan. They talked about why recruitment and talent development using different tools and measures is a problem, and why those two titans of HR should be working more closely. Enjoy!
Please take your seats. This evening's performance is about to begin.
So welcome to the next edition of the Chat Talent People podcast, our attempt to do a podcast a day for the whole of the month of May. It looks like it's probably going to extend into April as well. We've had some great conversations so far. Some of them around the obvious challenges of COVID-19. A lot of them people not wanting to talk about COVID-19, but just to sort of focus on other things for a while. And all of that's fine. I think we're probably going to get a bit of a mix today. We're delighted today to have Sarah Duggan with us. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you.
Hi. How are you? How are you
getting on? Not bad, actually, considering all that's going on. Just trying to find the escapism and the learning in what is a awful situation for many people.
Yeah, absolutely. As interesting, because you're currently down at Solent NHS Trust and have been with them for a few months, I believe. And you know, how's that going? Because that's almost you're presumably not frontline, but you're seeing some of the key frontline staff down there.
Yes, so I've been with Solent NHS as a sort of provider since 2016. And then in October last year, I joined them on an associate basis just to get more involved in some of their processes. So I'm actually very lucky to be in this position right now. But as you say, it's just seeing the effect of COVID, not just on the frontline workers, but on the staff as well. So we've really ramped up recruitment. We're looking for all manner of roles, and we're now almost planning for the wave and the aftermath, which is actually about a contingency plan to support those who are going to be affected extremely by, you know, the mental health, people potentially losing their homes, losing their jobs. So it's it's a very interesting place to be, because I know that there's a number of staff who are either frontline or they're still having to go into work. And seeing those pressures,
Because your background is sort of on the I'm going to use probably the wrong terminology here, but the psychology around learning and within the workplace, is that right?
Yes, so it's one of those terms where you use the term psychologist and everyone's like, oh, you're going to look into my eyes all around the eyes. But it's business psychology or occupational psychology. Yep. It's all about people at work, and it's about how they think, feel, perform, how to get the best out of their people. Then it sort of spans into things like OD and culture. And people, when they have studied the organisational psychology, they usually find a niche. Some go into culture, leadership, learning. I've gone into initially learning and development, then back into sort of recruitment, and now in assessment, and that's where I'm really kind of finding my niche. So it's helping people learn and understand about how people can be assessed effectively at work to get the best out of them for their potential and performance.
Yeah, and I guess there's a bit of a disconnect I think we see in a lot of places between how we do that, so how we assess that in a recruitment space, and how we then assess and develop it when we've got an employee through the door, and you've obviously seen all ends of that spectrum. So, what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think with anything, it's about having the right strategy, so then you can have the right tools and processes and training in place. Whether you're assessing for cultural alignment, I don't like the word fit because you don't want all the people to be the same.
No, absolutely.
Whether you're assessing for values, behaviours and strengths, it's so complex because people as individuals, we are complex. And so you almost need to start with the end goal in mind. What are you looking to achieve? What do you want the outcome to be? and then working backwards, because there are lots of different methods you would use for recruitment, but you would never use them in a development space, and vice versa. So, for example, resilience, that is a behavior and that is a coping mechanism. It is not a trait. Our resilience and our response that can change over time. Whereas something about somebody's strengths and preferences at work, that can relate to personality and that can be a little bit more fixed. Yes, it can still be fluid. And so it's about finding the right tool for the right role, and then also making sure that it's reliable and valid. So then it's getting into data analytics
as well. And we kind of know data is clearly a major thing in the HR space at the moment. So that's obviously key. You talk a lot. And you're obviously very clear around the need for what you do to deliver an ability for leaders to find I think you refer to it as a passion and a purpose. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that generally, and also how that's impacted by C19, the purpose, the passion and purpose piece?
Yeah, of course. So I think, again, traditionally, when you think about, you know, where interview and assessment and development process have come from, they came out of the 1950s post-war. It was very much competency-based, command and control. But now, as we enter this new world, it is more about emotional connection, how people think and feel about organisations and their leaders. And that's what creates brand engagement as well. And so a lot of organisations think, right, we've got to really sort of tap into this from our employees. And you see the organisations that keep their employees and connect with them do help them understand, well, you know, what is it? It's the little things like, why do I get out of bed every morning? Why do I go to work? You know, what's my mindset? How do I feel day in, day out? And there's a lovely book, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he's called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, I think. And he talks about this state of flow. And flow is a very sort of traditional concept of psychology, which is all about playfulness, how you connect with the world, how you sometimes daydream. And this all relates to us at work, because when we go to work, we don't just sit at a computer anymore and do as we're told and type. People want to engage and they want it to be fluid. And so people go to work and they have to enjoy what they're doing. They almost feel that has to have a meaning, some kind of bigger purpose. You know, so it's almost finding out about, you know, what is it the possibilities of what you can do. And that's where organizations are keeping their employees, because they're realizing now through COVID how they've had to react and respond. So I can't speak for other organizations, but I'm sure they are having to do this. In the NHS, we've had to maneuver people and mobilize people. So where L&D, you know, effectively all training just fell off the face of a cliff, we've had to mobilize those people into different areas of the organization. Those people who have a passion for the company, a vision, they're engaged, they're able to move quite quickly and quite swiftly. Those individuals who just like, oh, this is just a job and it's just what I do, but we've really, really had to almost ask around the possibilities, brainstorm, you know, giving them as much support as possible, because it can be a bit more challenging to mobilise those people, because it's just, oh, but just it's a job.
is that a bigger issue for the private sector compared to, say, the civil service or the NHS, where actually part of the appeal of working for those organisations is this kind of, I guess, service element?
Yeah, I would say that, because I had the opportunity to work in some great organisations in my contract career. And it's all those things where you say, you know, people stay for a manager or they leave for a manager, not the organization. And those managers who help you find your passion, you know, where do you want to be? Where do you want to go? You know, what do you want to know? How can we help you? You know, how can we make you be more productive? How can we help your perception and so forth? Yeah. And I think with the public sector, people have always worked in that environment because it's felt something they've wanted and needed to do, because it's had an impact. Yeah. It's almost altruism. And so I think it's been naturally easier to mobilize that in people the challenges is you don't have the investment, you don't also have the infrastructure, IT, for example. And so I think the private sector are really realizing and starting to catch up. And this, with COVID, it's so swift. I think the challenges, people have had knee-jerk reactions rather than thinking, okay, actually, how can we be planned and systematic? And this will, what I'll call, sort the wood from the trees. You'll see the organisations who are really engaged and value their people, as opposed to others who are just like, let's furlough everybody. And then that would really affect the brand as well.
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting conversation, a series of conversations we've had in these podcasts with people who have been furloughed, because the image is that you're getting rid of people, but actually, in many ways, it's saving people's jobs.
Yes. Yeah. I would say, definitely.
Yeah, and it's getting that message across and that communication piece. I think that's been the key. Going back to the passion and purpose because it's something we've talked about a lot over the last few weeks, particularly. How do we bring that passion and purpose almost assessment into the recruitment world? Because if we can get it right there and identify what someone's passion and purpose is, we should be able to define if they're the right employee for us.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And you might have seen a lot in the market around strengths-based recruitment. And so, you know, strengths is nothing new. It's effectively things being repackaged and re-explored. So if you think about somebody's motivation, so a motivation is what they like doing, what they enjoy. A talent is more about what people are good at. And sometimes you can be good at something without being motivated for it. But you bring those two together and that's a strength, because a strength is what motivates us and it's what we do well. And so what you would do in a recruitment context is, yes, you still have to ask competency-based questions, but they're all past focus. It's all about what have you done? Give me an example. Well, actually, if we want to be assessing for the potential of people and the future sort of alignment, it doesn't matter if they haven't experienced a certain situation. It's have they got the potential to deal with that? And there's a wonderful psychologist called Dr. Seligman who talks about positive psychology and something called learned optimism. And he's talking about if you assess somebody for styles and preferences, so again, that's linking to personality and, you know, what somebody feels they're good at, what they bring, how they bring themselves to work, how they align to a role, that's what predicts the future success, as opposed to just looking at have they done this. And I think as recruiters and talent acquisition, we're all very, very guilty of just looking at a CV and have they done this job before, have they worked in this job before. And I think as a result of COVID, you're not going to have people who've worked in this way before. You need people who can and bring certain behaviours and traits as well. So that kind of passion and purpose, almost, you know, finding people to reflect on what they've done, how they've dealt with situations and how they sort of rediscover themselves, you know, in difficulties.
Yeah. And that link between and linking their passion and purpose with the business passion and purpose creates the right sort of you use the word cultural alignment, and I completely agree it's not a cultural fit, and that probably builds a psychological contract even more strongly, so that as the business it develops and evolves, the employee is more likely to be happy to evolve and develop with the business if they've got that contract.
You're absolutely right. And I'm actually really glad you mentioned that, because the psychological contract is almost an unwritten expectation of the employer and employee relationship. And it's not a formal contract. It's not codified in any way. But actually, that's why I feel, you know, asking these sorts of questions around your passion, your purpose, your strengths at interview stage, or if you're coaching somebody into or a potential for a new role, because you need the alignment between what the expectations of the role are, what the individual will be doing, and what the challenges are. People always leave if there's a misalignment to what they think the job involves or they will be doing. And it's the same with around something called psychological safety, and it's really, really important now at the moment to create a space where we understand that we are human, we are fallible, and we're going to be making mistakes. We are working in a way that it's like we have never experienced before. So you need to create a space for people to say, you know, I'm not angry if this happens. It's okay if this goes wrong. What do we learn from it? And so forth.
Yeah. And we talked about a couple of times there about words that people use sometimes in the wrong context. And one of those that I think is still, even though it's been around for, it seems like the whole time I've been in recruitment, which is a long, long time, is the word psychometrics. Now, can you assess passion and purpose effectively using psychometrics on its own?
I would say no, because with any assessment, you always have to allow the candidate or the individual the opportunity for feedback and a two-way discussion. So, you know, you've got hundreds of thousands of tools out there to look at culture, your attitude, your strengths, your personality. So again, it's that sort of that end goal in mind. You can't just assess passion and purpose on its own at recruitment stage and make a decision based on that. You have to have something robust. So you don't want to use a tool just for the sake of using a tool and make people do lots, you know, three different tools. I've been through processes myself where I've done a cultural fit tool, a psychometric ability test, and then a personality test. They all have their place, but you don't want to be using all at one stage and, you know, just to make a decision. So you can just use strengths-based recruitment or strengths-based questions to explore, and then you could use an assessment to support that to see if it's true to themselves. Because people, again, always try sometimes to respond in what's called a social desirable way, which could be akin to them trying to show themselves in a different light. So again, you'd always use a tool which tests for that, because some of the tools, you know, you can be off the scale. You think they're a great fit, but if you haven't tested with that candidate how they think and feel, it can be detrimental.
Absolutely. Now we talked obviously there about the, you know, the psychological contract and the passion and purpose piece and that sort of match. And I know there's obviously benefits that are more at a personal level, shall we say. Sometimes that's difficult to get buy-in from senior leadership to use those types of assessments because they don't see the actual business benefits. Just give us your sort of thoughts around what the business benefits are of that sort of approach.
So if you're looking for development, then you would use more of a talent management process, and you've got some other, again, tools there. I'd call them more self-discovery. And people tend to see the benefit in those more because they've already invested in those people and they're in the organisation.
Yeah.
As you say, at the sort of talent acquisition piece, it can be more challenging because these tools can be expensive. And if you've got the choice of four candidates and you bring them all to interview and you want to use four, then you use four tools and that can be expensive. So I would always say stagger your process. So, you know, as you know, you would have your interview, a telephone interview, then you would perhaps have a face-to-face or an assessment centre. I would tend to use the assessments in the latter part of the process. So perhaps you've got somebody who you are keen on, but you just want to understand a little bit more, or you've got a choice of a number of individuals. And what these tools do is they just give you an indication of somebody's, you know, strong preferences and what I would call lesser preferences. I don't like the term strengths and weaknesses because I think we all do have development areas, but they are, I would say, the weaknesses are more an underuse of a behaviour. And you need to explore the overuse and the underuse of the behaviour so you can potentially see the risk of hiring that person. So what these actual tools do is they de-risk your hiring process, because I think in research on the CIPD, 80% of directors and executives have felt they've hired the wrong person at one time, which is quite disturbing. Then if you look at Gallup research, people have said things like 40% have rejected, regretted a decision of hiring somebody. And so what these tools do is they can be used by trained professionals, but there are also now tools out in the market where you don't have to be an organizational psychologist. You can just be you know, really good talent acquisition professional, and you go on an accredited course. And I think the more we use those with our resourcing and talent teams, that the better, yep. because you don't have to be a scientist to understand a lot of these, because they're very informative. Yep. They've got lots of infographics, and it just helps those understanders, those leaders understand what's the risk of hiring this individual? What could be the potential derailers if we don't manage their behaviors correctly? And especially during COVID, this is going to bring out the best of people, but it's also going to bring out the worst. And we need to understand if it's going to bring out the worst, how do we mitigate them and support them? You know, for example, they don't blow up at their team, or they don't, you know, suffer from burnout or go and jack their job because they can't cope with it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And some very, very different challenges leading and managing remote teams, which seems to be where we're going to be going in the future. So definitely the need to change the way we recruit people and what we look at. I guess the piece around de-risking is a bit like, it's a bit like cooker, isn't it? What's the better the ingredients you put into a meal, the more likely that meal is to be a good meal. And that's probably the same in terms of why we should be talking more across the talent acquisition and talent management community about how we assess. Sarah, that's been really, really interesting. I'm going to wrap up shortly. I'm going to ask you a question that we've asked most people who we've spoken to on these podcasts. It's clearly an unusual time with COVID-19. We've seen lots and lots of initiatives and things going on around the world, both in recruitment and outside of recruitment, to help people. Is there anything that you've seen that you particularly thought that's brilliant or that's amazing, or you know, it just gave you a nice feeling?
Yeah, I would say this sort of move towards emotional connection and passion and purpose. So people understanding how to follow curiosity. So how do I learn through this? And, you know, what can we do to support other people? I would also say it's the bit about boosting resilience. So people really sort of coming together and helping individuals who have been affected. And then also recognizing really who keeps the world turning. I absolutely love a book called Chavs, The Dehumanization of the Working Class, because I think for too long we've undervalued individuals in the society who keep the world going when there's a crisis. And so what I've seen is people who have specifically out of maybe retail, talent acquisition, L&D, they've lost their jobs, they've lost their contracts, and they're going to work in Tesco's. I've been supporting the NHS with healthcare assistant recruitment porters, and the amount of people who, you know, they are overcoming their pride and saying, I do it because I need to feed my family and put, you know, food on the table. And so I think you realise how much, you know, these people are worthwhile in society.
Crisis. Lois Leonard at the recruitment events company talks about, and I won't use the exact phrase, but it's something like when there's a crisis, don't look for the crisis, look for the helpers. Yes. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing at the moment. The real strengths in our community are those who are helping others, just because that's what they do. That's been really interesting, as I say, Sarah. Thank you so much for your time, and keep yourself safe. And we look forward to seeing you on the other side of what it is we're going through.
Wonderful, good to speak to you.
And to you, thanks very much.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Head over to chattalent.com for more blogs, vlogs, webinars, and other great content about HR, talent, and recruiting. Everything you could possibly need. Enjoy!